Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Joining us, and this is really good because, you know, my doc is, I have a couple, but my one doctor is on staff at Trinity Health, Dr. Mufti. But I got a call from her office like about 10 days ago. I had an appointment, I think, on Monday, and they called up and they said, we're going to kind of, you know, for emergency stuff, we're here. But, you know, you're hopeless anyway, so let's just leave it alone for now. You'll probably make it. Then again, no, she didn't say that. But anyway, but, you know, that's happening a lot. And a lot of docs, some are, many aren't, saying, you know, because of this coronavirus, this Wuhan flu, if you prefer, I don't care, that, in fact, you know, maybe we're going to kind of lighten our patient load or whatever. Well, let's talk for a minute about this, because he's the guy who knows what's going on here. That's Ken Ferrucci, the interim executive director for the Connecticut State Medical Society. Good morning, Ken.
Good morning, Ray. How are you?
Well,
thank you for having me, and thank you for practicing social distancing by having me, you know, be
count your blessings. Yeah, count your blessings, people. But I've, you know, really, Ken, I've done that most of my life, social distancing. So I'm kind of a moody loner to begin with. So, okay, let's talk about this, because I don't think I'm unique in that my doc said, you know, until this thing kind of get a handle on it, maybe you ought to just take a little, we'll just, you know, if it's an emergency, you need a prescription refilled, something like that, give us a call, we'll make sure it gets done. What's going on? And you do want to talk about tele, you know, a lot of us are you know, doing, you know, broadcasting from our houses. And what about telemedicine? What's going on there?
Well, let me first start by saying, Ray, and I don't mean to get off the issue that you wanted me to talk about today, but how proud we are of our physician members.
Oh, God, yes.
These are men and women who have basically dedicated the prime years of their lives to train to take care of us. They've taken an oath to take care of us, and now they're fulfilling that oath to take care of us, in many cases, at the detriment to their own personal health and safety. So
very risky.
I just would like to start by putting that out there.
Well, I got a text from my daughter's out in Los Angeles. She's a pediatrician, and, you know, I mean, they're just getting swamped. I mean, they really are. And, you know, my other sister is a an anesthesiologist. And, you know, so she's right in the front lines, too. And there are many others that are and are continuing to see patients. However, what's the purpose, let me put it this way, behind telemedicine? What do you see it being, Ken?
Well, it's obviously not the way that we would like to see. Obviously, there's nothing better than a face-to-face, warm hands meeting between physicians and the patients. However, these are unprecedented times. And several years ago, we did support legislation to allow for telemedicine, but it would require a face-to-face meeting first before you could then do telehealth or telemedicine services.
Right.
But right now, we're in a point where we need to relax the rules, and both the Center for Medicaid and Medicare Services and Department of Social Services and many of the private health insurers have done this to allow for physicians to do telemedicine services without having a face-to-face meeting first. So that's by far the most important thing. Is we have patients who are afraid to leave their homes, but have health services, and they may not be COVID COVID-19 related, but they do have health care needs that need to be taken care of.
Ken, what exactly can you do remotely with telemedicine? What kind of procedures can be done? What services can be performed?
Well, it's not necessarily procedures, Ray. But I can tell you that we have, through the Connecticut State Medical Society, two platforms that help our members.
Okay.
One is called iPrescribe, which allows our physicians to securely meet the requirements of electronic prescribing, so that they don't have to physically write a prescription, and they're meeting all the requirements of the state and federal government for prescribing. The other one is a system called Backline, which is a telehealth service, and it meets all of the what are called HIPAA requirements. And
right.
as you know, Red, because I know that this is near and dear to your heart with your family being physicians, it allows them to do virtual patient visits and have video chats or share files, send notifications, and even sign documents online that can meet the requirements of a virtual meeting.
I mean, that's fascinating. You know, and I was thinking things, not major things, but like, for example, blood pressure, temperature. I don't know that you could do blood tests over the phone. But nevertheless, I mean, there is quite a bit of just general maintenance I guess you could probably do through telemedicine.
There definitely is. There definitely is. There are ways that you can communicate with your physician and other healthcare providers for that matter.
Right, sure.
We need to thank them all for what they're doing during these unprecedented times. But there are ways that you can communicate with your healthcare provider on issues like blood pressure, other issues. There are remote systems that can be put in place to the monitoring systems. But it's definitely a time where we need to really think about allowing our patients to provide to get provided services remotely, because we don't want them losing, you know, leaving their houses at this time as we're all kind of sequestered in place.
Now, what are you hearing, Ken, from, and Ken Ferrucci, by the way, is the interim president of the Connecticut State Medical Society. Before I get to that, okay, nurse practitioners, are they part of your outfit?
No, they're not our members, but what I can tell you is that over the past month or two, the healthcare community has really been working hard together to make sure that we take care of this as a group of healthcare professionals,
right,
and working together.
One of the great ones that's come about of lately, a subspecialty, has been the hospitalist. And I know that, you know, a lot of times, just a case in point, there was a movie William Hurt was in. I think it was William Hurt. I can't remember which of the Hurt boys. But it was, you know, he's a doc. He ends up in the hospital. And it's kind of like he's lost. Because, you know, he was one of the providers, and he's asking, well, what's going on here? What's going on here? What's going on here? And, you know, he doesn't really get an answer. So, you know, they started this specialty maybe 20 years ago, and it's developing even more, is the hospitalist. And that guy goes around, you know, that guy or gal goes around and kind of explains just, you know, why are you doing this test? Why are you doing this test? I mean, that's a really good thing for a patient, because it's kind of it's an alien environment for you, certainly.
Yeah, hospitalists are critical to our healthcare system now, and you're right. It's been a developing specialty over the past, you know, 10, 15, 20, 20 years, and it's a group of men and women who are simply located in the hospital. So if you, as an internist or as a primary care physician, admit somebody to the hospital, there's somebody that will follow that patient around.
Yes.
Be able to give them the information that they need while the other physician is in his or her office providing services to their patients.
And there's still a judgment call, Ken, that has to be made, and that is if you, yeah, as the physician, are doing a phone consultation with somebody, and all of a sudden you see some very or hear some various clues that may say, well, maybe you need to come in. That's a hard call, but I think it's an important one.
Well, it's a harder call even these days, because before this whole coronavirus outbreak, you would simply say, let's get you into the hospital. But now physicians are being very judicious in their determination as to whether they're going to send somebody into a hospital or not. So that's a huge burden on the physicians these days.
Or even coming into the office, for that matter, you know.
Or coming into the office, yeah.
Well, so what, you know, Ken, let's talk for a minute about just what your members, and how many are there, by the way?
We represent the physicians and both the residents and the students. So we have several thousand members.
Okay. So, you know, a sizable chunk of people. What are you hearing from them? What are they saying they need to have happen? I remember you and I didn't talk, but your predecessor, we talked a bit about, you know, during the ACA while that was coming in, even back to 93 with Hillary Care and her thing. But there were concerns about that. I mean, the system is – just tell us what your members are saying and what they're conversing – they're passing on to you.
Well, they'd like some, and first of all, we have to give credit to Governor Lamont for how he's handled this issue, and
yes,
he's understood this is not just a state issue, this is a regional issue.
Yeah.
He's been working with other governors on this, so first of all, we need to thank him for that. The other thing is, and you and I have discussed this many years ago.
Sure we have.
Is liability issues.
Oh.
We have physicians who want to come out of retirement. They want to move out of their specialty to help take care of this issue, and they their medical liability insurance. If they're retired, they don't have medical liability insurance, and they want to volunteer. And if they're working outside of their specialty, their liability insurance will not cover them. But they do want to volunteer in other areas. So that's probably one of the biggest issues is that, but I don't want to, before we hang up, I don't want to lose sight of two other incredibly huge issues that are concerning our members. One is we had a conversation this week, and we're partnering with the Connecticut Association Against Domestic Violence.
Okay.
That's a huge issue that we're going to be needing to deal with over the next couple of months. The other thing is the issue of substance abuse.
People
are stuck at home and looking for things to do, that's something that we're very concerned about.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, and in fact, John Silva this morning in the early news had a story that, you know, liquor sales, there's another substance that can easily be abused. 55% nationwide sales are up. And some people, this one lady said, well, yeah, that may be true, but it may be as it is with toilet paper. People are just hoarding liquor, you know, because of fear of the unknown and what's yet to come. That, and then the opioid thing, I don't know. Ken, when did that really start, the opioid crisis? Because we have a lot of people that are dying from this.
We do. And the opioid crisis started, I believe, in the late 90s. And just kind of got worse as we had more drug salesmen going into physician offices, and it was promoted as being safe. And it took a long time for us to realize that it wasn't a safe drug. It was an addictive drug. But what I can tell you is that the curriculum in med schools and the continuing medical education that's being provided to physicians right now has changed dramatically. And unfortunately, with a lot of the barriers put on opioid prescribing, most of the opioid abuse now is from the black market, be it through heroin and fentanyl or for illegally manufactured pills. That's what we're really addressing right now.
I don't know why anybody knowingly would take fentanyl, knowing there's a very good chance that you would be killed. And that's hard for me to understand, but I guess there are people who know it and do it.
Yeah, I don't think anybody's really knowingly taking fentanyl.
It's just getting
buying
it.
the medication, or not the medication, it's not a medication, the drug that they typically use, and it's been laced with fentanyl, and that's what's being the thing that kills them.
Right. Well, allegedly it's supposed to give you more bang for the buck, from what I understand.
Yeah.
So, not that I know. But you know, conversely, you know, because there have been some restrictions, in fact, you know, considerable restrictions, rightfully so, in the prescription of, you know, various opioids, painkillers, that some doctors are reluctant to override it. Now, is that a problem with your guys? They're kind of your men and your women. Are they kind of concerned that, you know, the DEA will come jumping in on them?
Well, it is a little of a concern. And first of all, let me say that the medical society was very active to work with our legislature to implement those restrictions.
Good.
On prescribing. But you are seeing a hesitancy in certain professions, not necessarily pain management physicians,
right,
your family physicians, your internists, to write pain prescriptions. Even when you're talking about your dentist, and they're not our members.
Exactly.
They're hesitant to prescribe as well after some oral surgeries.
By the way, are dentists in your society?
No, they're not.
They are doctors.
Our own separate society, but we have a very close relationship.
I'm glad that's happening. Any final thoughts here, Ken? You want to just jump in here for a sec?
I think we've kind of covered it all. Again, I just think that people need to heed the warnings that they see. This is obviously going to be a long-term event. We're not talking about being able to come out of our rabbit holes next week. We're talking about months that this is going to take place. And I just think that everybody just needs to heed the warnings that they hear from their physicians and from our governor and from other professionals.
You know, maybe sometime next week, Joe and I ought to have, you know, one of your members on, you know, just once in a while to kind of discuss this thing as we learn more and more about it. So there is that. Ken, it's been great talking to you. I hope you'll do it again.
And my pleasure, Ray. And anytime you need, I can get an infectious disease doc, a pain management doc, anything that you want on your show, I'm more than happy to do.
You're a go-to guy. Hey, Ken Ferrucci, thanks for being on.
All right. Thanks, Ray. Take care.
All right, you too. Ken Ferrucci, Interim Executive Director, Connecticut State Medical Society. They're there. They're there. May not be seeing as much as you would be used to, but, you know, if you need the help, they're there.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.